This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast. Or is it? Who knows? Yes, the jokes are back. More quantum dad jokes, even though I am neither quantum nor a dad. But
well, you may be, or you may not be. Every choice creates a parallel universe, so the choice you made not to have a child, some other day in a parallel universe.
Dear. Yes, yes, yes. We're still on quantum. And we are continuing our dive into the news. We were going to do, as Jan mentioned, we were going to do some quantum episodes anyway. And, well, the news has really forced our hand. So we're going to dive into this next little batch of updates from all the hyperscalers now. We're going to complete the roundup, or at least, you know, the big top three. And... the big top three in the Western world. There we go. We'll qualify that. Actually, that's a good question. I know that this completely derails the episode, and Jan is not at all prepared for it, although I'm sure he can see where I'm heading. Yes. We are going to be talking about the other two hyperscalers, Microsoft and Amazon. We previously talked about Google's foray here. Is this just a Western hyperscaler thing, or is, you know, a AliCloud, or, you know, any of the other sort of Far East cloud providers also dabbling in quantum?
You have to make the distinction between who's talking about and who's doing it. Amazon, Google, Azure are stock market listed companies that have to make hype, that have to show that they're high tech. And of course, if you look at the news cycles, I don't read Chinese, which I've always felt sad about because I really would like to, but it's just too much of an effort to learn that as well, which is my shortcoming. But I'm sure that in the Asiatic part of the world, Tencent and Alibaba are also doing the same kind of hype things. Of course, the political and cultural climate is different there, economics are different, there will be a change. But the reason that we're mainly talking about the big three hyperscalers is because they do a lot of noise around it. They actually don't do anything. Azure has invested in universities. And I know Azure particularly because they have invested heavily in the University of Delft in the Netherlands to do research on their part of the quantum stuff. And of course, the hyperscalers have the simulators on their cloud services, and that's valid for all the hyperscalers, the Westerners and the non-Western versions of them. But the research in quantum is definitely going all over the world. Now, America did have a kind of an early lead. The Z-Wave quantum computers have been around for almost a decade now, I think. But really see them not as quantum, they are quantum computers because they're computers that have quantum chips in them, blah, blah. But they're meant for experimentation to figure out how to make this work, to get all of the hurdles out of the way. They are not meant to start writing the next word processor upon, which will never be the case. But I know, for example, that Singapore has a big investment, the whole Middle East, a lot of money there, a lot of that money is going to quantum as well. But the money is currently still going towards the scientific institutions that make noise. And that's why last time we talked about the two papers from Google. Yes, they came from Google Research, but actually if you read in the papers, those are universities that were backed by Google, and there's a Google project leader involved, I guess, or something like that. And Google has some scientists that also dabble with it, obviously. But it's always been like this. And again, I don't follow news cycles in the other parts of the world, but I'm pretty sure that happens.
Yeah, so I've done a little bit of live research while
I saw you. That's why I kept talking.
Exactly, while you were going through that, and it's quite interesting actually. So both Alibaba, which is the largest of the Chinese cloud providers, and Baidu actually exited the they did have quantum computing labs up until the start of 2024. But late January, early February 2024, both Alibaba and Baidu have completely exited the quantum space. But both Tencent and I think some other folks have. So when Alibaba announced that they were shutting down their quantum computing research lab. They donated all of their equipment to one of the universities, and Baidu also did the same thing, donated their equipment to another university. So it seems like, and as I say, Tencent are continuing to and accelerating their investment. So it does sound like it's happening, but I think your point is kind of very valid that it, for the most part, and honestly, this is very similar to a lot of the way that news is told in the Western world. A lot of the things that are happening are out in these regions are less well reported on. And, you know, I think, you know, that's just the way that the world and the news cycles are. But yeah, it's kind of interesting that literally the largest Asian cloud provider is decided to exit from the quantum computing world, and yet the three major Western hyperscalers, as we will be talking about a little bit later on in this episode, are very much kind of doubling down and continuing to kind of talk about it, and not just talk about it, but deliver things on it.
Yeah, but there's also the political angle here, because make no mistake, there's a huge quantum arms race happening at the moment. Because one of the use cases, we're going to talk more about in detail in the next coming episodes, is cryptography. It is well known that once quantum becomes reality, cryptography to be used today becomes useless. So you can bet your bottom dollar and all the other dollars that every government of some size in the world is pushing this research forward. Now, in the Western world, this is usually done by the governing bodies giving grants to universities to put up projects and search things. In the US, I'm pretty sure, I don't know, and if I knew, I wouldn't be able to talk about it, that there are a lot of DARPA projects, black hat projects happening around this as well. And if you look at China, I'm very certain that China is pursuing quantum a lot. I mean, they're in space now. They've done that at a record time. They, of course, are able to look at what other countries did and kind of avoid sidestepping, potholes, whatever. So they are able to catch up very quickly. And my personal interpretation of the exit of the Alibabas and changing it around is more that the Chinese government is very careful not to give too much power to certain companies, and have actually some CEOs have disappeared for a while until they kind of learned their lesson, if I can say it like that. Whether that's good or bad, let's not talk about that. We're not a political podcast, but it is a reality, and I would not be surprised at all that there has been some reshuffling happening because certain entities became too successful, and that was not good. And of course, to hush it a bit more as well.
Yeah, I actually, like, fun side note here, I actually have like real world experience with this. I worked with a number of Chinese companies several organizations ago now, I guess, and I worked a lot with Chinese telcos, and it was very, very interesting. The heads of those various telcos would basically swap around on a fairly regular basis. They would just go from one organization to the next. The person that was there would move on to another one. And this was a sort of a state-driven initiative to make sure that, you know, they were all fairly equal in terms of what they were able to achieve. And, it was very, very interesting because, you know, over the years that I worked with these folks, you know, I would go to one particular telco and meet with one particular team, and then several years later I would go to a different telco and meet that same team that was now at this different place, and, you know, talking about a lot of the same things that I'd been talking to them at previous organizations, and the same. It was a particularly interesting experience. I can tell you that. Anyway, slight diversion, but
yeah, I'm actually kind of wondering, I mean, you're looking at the US at the moment, the new, let's call it, scientific way of thinking. This is going to hurt them, I think. They're kind of closing down a lot of researchers in certain areas. That's, again, not going to detail here, not get political. But they are creating an environment where if I'm a researcher and I'm dependent on grants, big grants, I am no longer certain I will be able to continue next year because things change very quickly. So I would expect some kind of a brain drain happening from the US. People just going for more stability, because again, these quantum projects are not things you do in 1, 3, or 5 years. You're talking decades here.
Yeah.
And with a big upfront investment. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see, well, we won't see it right now because it's all going to happen behind the scenes, of course, but in 5 or 10 years' time, it comes out that a lot of people moved away from the Western side. Maybe some will come to Europe, but of course, Europe, because of the fragmentation of all our budgeting, is always 2 steps behind, sadly. We should really do something about that. Mm. If you look at Asia and the Middle East, for example, lots and lots of money and lots, how do you say this, all pointed in the same direction. I wouldn't be surprised if this proves to be a very big problem down the line, because again, it is an arms race. We talked about cryptography, but you just mentioned telecom. Quantum will be huge in telecom as well, because faster than light suddenly becomes possible. You want to know why? Wait a couple of episodes. But it is actually weird, because I have a couple of mailing lists that I am subscribed to, and if I remember, I'll put them in the show notes as well. And most of the news coming in, except of the fluff pieces that we talked about last time, and I think we'll talk about next time, because I don't think we'll have time again for this episode.
Yeah.
Those come from the Western world, but all of the actual hard-hitting, deep research happening, those almost all come from the Asian, Middle East part of the world. And if you keep in mind that that part of the world is more secretive than this part of the world, over here, if you find something, you all talk about it, while over there you kind of jump to a lot of hoops and be careful and everything. The fact that it is already with that bias predominantly coming from that part of the world, that's interesting. That's really going to be weird. And it's also not that easy to copy this stuff, because we did say that earlier that the Chinese, the binders and stuff, they had kind of a way to jump ahead, leapfrog a little bit of starting stuff. But there are different ways that people are investigating quantum now. We have the superconducting way, you have some other ways we'll talk about later. So it's not as easy as just taking some code from GitHub and changing it a little bit and now I have my own program. No, it is actually very deep, different philosophical ways of looking at it, to be honest. I mean, don't forget, these controversies have started in, I think, the 1920s when Einstein actually said that quantum theory was bogus. It was wrong, it felt wrong. That's where the quote comes from: God doesn't play dice with the universe, because the whole thing that quantum says is that everything is random. And Niels Bohr was kind of his counterpart that said, yes it is, no it isn't. From then there were already different ways of looking at it, and that only got, I'm going to say, worse, because it's better, more viewpoints is always better, obviously. But that does mean that you just can't copy paste something, because then you will get the same thing and it'll have cost you as much money as the original thing cost. So there needs to be some creative thinking there. We're not, definitely not yet at the stage you can just copy it, change a little bit and put a new patent out. That's years away, decades away, I think. So having a shift of the money, of the budgets being allocated away from America, I think, from the US in this part, due to their political, cultural changes, let's call it that. I'm being very careful with my wording here, because I don't want to get into this kind of fight, because it is what it is, and I'm not going to change it. But it will have effects, and because this is very embryonic research still, I mean, yes, it's been going on since the 1920s and earlier than that even, but it's very easy still for people to move around. Because every country that is doing something with this has some innovative things happening that aren't happening anywhere else. So there's a lot of opportunities for these people. They don't need to stay where they are. And I'm very curious what that will happen once this comes out. Because, I mean, we just mentioned cryptography earlier, and yes, we don't have quantum computers yet. Does that mean quantum isn't a danger at the moment? No, absolutely not. It is a danger, because at the moment, all of the secret organizations out there are hoovering up all the encrypted data in the world. they know they can't crack it because the encryption is good, SHA-256, whatever, you need millions of years until that quantum computer pops up. And the moment they have them, they can decrypt decades worth of information. So the first geopolitical entity that has actual useful cryptography on a quantum level, that's going to be an interesting moment to live.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is almost the great boogeyman living underneath the bed of cybersecurity. The moment that quantum cryptography cracking becomes viable will be the time where everything changes. Mm-hmm. And
because there is actually a lot of research happening today to create a quantum, cannot be broken by quantum
proof,
if you like, encryption using classical computing. Because the whole idea that quantum can easily break him is because classical computing is basically based on two primes that are multiplied. And if you know what primes are, you can figure it out. And calculating primes is very hard to do for classical computers, but very easy, apparently, for quantum computing. So if you get a cryptography scheme that isn't based on mathematical calculations of prime numbers, you can actually have quantum proof encryption today. And there's a lot of research happening there. I don't think anything is actually feasible yet. But then again, if it did exist today, you and me would probably know about it.
Yeah.
But
well, maybe. Maybe we wouldn't know about it. That's the whole
thing. I wouldn't. I said wouldn't.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because it might very well be that the secret organizations, the three-letter acronym organizations out there already have some kind of quantum proofish encryption that they're using for their stuff, and they haven't shared it yet. Totally viable, possible. We'll know once it's no longer necessary. We should know. But yeah. If that happens soon enough, or is already the case, then if you kind of say conservatively quantum, useful quantum cryptography breaking things are 10, 20 years away, at some point, yes, old data still gives insights, but it's more of historical analysis than not something you can really act upon today. So as long as that time difference is long enough, it might just go out with a whimper. But again, it will be an interesting day.
Indeed. Indeed. It's one of those, I mean, at the moment, it's all very theoretical, but that arms race between...
It's not theoretical. That's actually very, very real.
Well, but it's real, but it doesn't exist yet. Therefore, it's theoretical.
No, the arms race is real because a lot of money is being spent.
The arms race is very real, but in my mind, the arms race I'm talking about now is the arms race between quantum proof encryption and quantum encryption cracking. Depending on which one of those things reaches viability first.
As far as I know, there is actually an algorithm known to break classical encryption. It's there. The moment the quantum hardware is there, they can run it. The problem, they can't use it right now because using the algorithm, classical computing, still takes thousands of years. Yeah. But the moment it gets there, I mean, people are actually working very hard on making those algorithms on that side and that side.
Yeah.
So that's still a lot of money is changing hands to make that, to give me the box that's something. A lot of science fiction series have this thing about the little box, put a cable in it that breaks all encryptions. Mm-hmm. That's basically the holy grail these days. But yeah, I see what you mean. But it's like with the moon race. I mean, yes, it was theoretical until Armstrong put his foot on the moon. But yes, that arms race was also going on a long time before 1969, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Or it was all done in a soundstage in Southern California, you know, also possible.
Yes, with CGI, right? Take a look at the movies they had in 69.
It was all practical effects. You know, that's one head back.
How do you...
by the way, just for clarity, I don't actually believe that. I do think that people landed on the moon. I just like...
Capricorn Warren was a very nice movie, but that's about it.
There we go. All right.
Okay, well, as... quantum computing predicted, we were going to do an episode on the other two hyperscalers, or we were not. And observation has demonstrated that Actually, we were not.
Sorry.
It's one way to make planning that always works. But unless you have anything else to add on this topic for the moment, then that is all the time I have for today. Well, I observe you not wanting to add anything, so it's all we have. You can support this podcast, become a patron, help you contribute us. That's the whole way it should work. I love talking about this stuff, so keep me in the air. We have some plans for Quantum still to come, so please, if you can, spare a little bit. We are very grateful, always. We're on YouTube. You can like, subscribe, and most importantly, see us, or not, and do YouTube stuff. That's Dave waving for those that are not watching us on YouTube, which is a bad thing. Please go to our website at www.roaringelephant.org. Links at Patreon page, YouTube page, and information on the podcast. And you can send your feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Let us know if you like this little meander in the quantum world, if you want more or less. But we'll see. We'll still want to do that thing because I think it's interesting. Until next time, my name is, I think Bohr was right. Yep.
And my name is Diversion Dave.
I look forward to talking to you again next week. Goodbye.
See you then.
It's not a diversion. It's a quantum entanglement possibility.
Sure. In the parallel universe, we actually talked about the original topic we were going to talk about on that episode. But there we go.
Yeah, but they don't have to talk about the thing that we just talked about. It was way harder, so we still
maybe
come
not.
Top.
Maybe they didn't get to it.
Oh, that's we'll a third parallel universe. There might even be a parallel universe where we don't have the Roaring Elephant podcast. But that should be an exceedingly rare one.
Possibly.
Or this is the only universe that has it.
Also possible.